We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 366. Wednesday off tonight, Scott, thanks to the rain in Detroit. Got that doubleheader on Thursday. You know, I was thinking, I hate when there's doubleheaders scheduled for days that our show comes out, because that means people are less likely to listen to it immediately because there's Yankees baseball on all day. So they might be delayed, and then it's not as timely, because maybe the next time they listen to this, there's going to be two games that have happened since we recorded.
Yeah, one of those struggles, one of those podcaster struggles, when you getting the show out on time so that people have ample amount of time in their day to consume it, especially when you're talking about things in real life. This is not evergreen. This is what's happening now, and nothing happened today. Right. Nothing.
Like, what if tomorrow in one of these doubleheaders, J-Hap goes out there who's going to pitch,
yeah,
and he pitches a perfect game.
Right.
Then a person listens to this show on Friday morning thinking, wow, I'm going to hear about J-Hap's perfect game, and we don't mention it at all. That could be confusing to said listener.
These are the scenarios I think of. Right. Yeah, see, everybody, it's not just baseball where he goes down these dark paths. It's everything. Down the spiral.
Got to figure out
the other side of it. What were we just talking? We were just talking about something. Oh, yeah. Down the spiral. Pretty much all these conversations about offline stuff too. Down the spiral.
My brain is a never-ending tunnel with doors that just lead to dark places. I try and not bring them on to this show unless it has to do with the Yankees. Then sure, I'll bring it up.
But you will complain.
That's what I'm here for.
But you will complain if John and Susan do it.
Yeah, I will. Oh, yeah. I don't think that it's a big deal that I complained about them complaining. I understand the irony, and the amount of people that came up to me
at a couple Saturdays ago at the event and said something about that in particular, like how they started laughing out loud when you started complaining about someone complaining.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a lot of people thought that was funny.
I think that if I did not complain on the show, I think my complaints bring a lot to this show.
I'm not saying they don't. I think it's just the it's amusing when you're complaining about other people complaining. Do you know, this is a Seinfeld episode.
I was just going to say, this had to have been one of the 7 or 9 seasons of Seinfeld.
Yeah. I feel like I just said it like Jerry Seinfeld, too.
Why do you complain so much?
About the complaining.
Last we recorded was Monday morning, I think. It was Monday morning. Again,
yeah.
Podcaster brain is clouding my
Well, we've been doing a lot more mornings this year than we have in the past.
Right. And the Yankees had one more game against the Red Sox, and I think they just put the final nail in the coffin, because we had already seen Dave Dombrowski get the axe in Boston. And you could kind of tell, once you fire the president and GM of your team,
yeah,
you're basically just chalking the season up to this is not our year. And then there's talks that come out that maybe they're not going to re-sign J.D. Martinez if he opts out of his contract. Maybe they're going to look to trade Mookie Betts to try and restock that farm system because they don't think they can sign him long term. Shit could get bad for the Red Sox quickly if all of these sorts of things happen.
Who's going to bail them out? Who's going to be the bailout team? What are the Dodgers doing? Can they sneak in and screw us again?
I mean, I don't even know if there needs to be a bailout team, because I still think their offense, even without J.D. Martinez or without Mookie Betts, I mean, you lose both of them, your offense is going to take a huge hit. But if they lose one of those guys, I still think their offense is in pretty good shape, position player-wise. But they're pitching. Porcello's a free agent. Nathan Eovaldi, I think we saw the best two-month run of his life last year. We're never going to see that again.
I don't think he's going to be healthy enough for anybody to see anything, honestly.
And they signed him to $68 million. That was a dumb Dombrowski move.
Yeah.
Like, you want to know what Dave Dombrowski gets you into? Look at the Detroit Tigers right now. I know they beat the Yankees somehow last night, but look at the state of the Detroit Tigers. They're going to lose like 110 games. They've got Miguel Cabrera on the books for $30 million a year for 4 more years.
Yeah, and he can't even run the bases right now. I mean, that dude is not going to be I don't even know how he's going to walk in 4 years.
So that is what you get when you hire Dave Dombrowski. You get a bunch of high-priced guys either re-signed or acquired. And if everything goes well, and the stars align like they did for the Red Sox last year, you're going to be a damn good team.
You know,
you might win the World Series.
Yeah. It's funny because what this, it's like a classic case of like buying at the top, right? Like you are feeling really good. You just won a championship. Dombrowski gutted your system, got you the players that you needed to do to compete, whether you won a championship or you got far into the playoffs, and you're feeling good about your team. But then what happens is that like the euphoria of winning, you're like, oh, he can do no wrong. And you're now your judgment is clouded because all you see is championships or just success in Detroit's case. And you're looking around and you're like, well, now what do how did we sign that guy? When did that happen? Like you black out after the good season and all of a sudden now you have Nathan Eovaldi on the books. Or you have
Chris Sale, you know,
Chris Sale contract, with a bad contract.
Do you realize Sale's contract hasn't even kicked in yet? That's next year.
Or Miguel Cabrera on the books forever. So Dombrowski has that like that way about maneuvering in a way that can win on a given year, but then after that, like you need to lock him down and like handcuff him. Don't let him talk to anybody. Like that, the next job he takes, you just get to that point where a success and make sure you know where that is beforehand, so that you can come out of there.
Well, I think for certain
lock
teams,
him down.
For certain teams, like if the Tigers, what did they go to the World Series twice under Dombrowski, and they were very competitive for like almost a decade.
Right.
So had they won one of those World Series, I'd say Tigers fans would have said well worth it.
Yeah, but they had a different circumstance too, I think. Like, yeah, they have some high-priced guys, but they also had some good talent coming up through their system at that point too. And I think I'm not looking at Dombrowski for that stuff. Dombrowski went out and got some hired guns, but they also had, I think, enough talents to sustain it.
Yeah, so. I don't know the Detroit Tigers system well enough to speak to that, but Dombrowski's not one to believe in prospects. He does not believe in prospects very much.
No,
he's
not.
He will always trade the prospect for the proven guy.
I mean, he had a guy named Justin Verlander that was pretty damn good that came up through the system and
I don't think Justin Verlander's been in the league since like 2006. I don't think that was Dombrowski, was it?
Was it? Was it the beginning?
I don't remember.
Anyway,
this is not the point.
He's been in the league. He's been in the league. Yeah, since 2006, because he got drafted in probably 2003, 2004. Anyway,
but so that's what you're going to get when you sign up as the Red Sox, as they're looking at the future of their team, and you know you are wearing a shirt that says it said "Rebuild the Empire." It's pretty faded now. It's one of our OG shirts.
Yep.
I am wearing our shirt from an event earlier this season. Take the East. I think those two things to this conversation are very apropos because rebuilding the Empire is not something Dombrowski would be capable of. It's something that Brian Cashman did, and Take the East is not something the Yankees have done in a long time. 2012, right? That's the last time they won the division.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been, and when you look back, you're like, damn, it has been that long.
It's going to be, and I think their magic number is still 9 to win the division. It's going to happen. And it was step one on, it was number one on the checklist of things for the 2019 season was win the division, and then we're going to take it from there.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening. You're right. They kind of backed the track up and went back to, you know, the what happened, I think, when the 90s teams were forming and they had a nucleus and they started adding pieces around that. You're seeing a lot of similarities in the way it was built. And these shirts came out. We put these shirts out
2016, when Sanchez.
It was before they all came up. It was like right before they all came up. But we knew they were there and we knew that they were coming.
But
and
we never
saw the writing on the wall.
But we did, but we were also all still so skeptical because
yeah,
the Yankees...
but Aaron Judge, I think, changed a lot of people's minds. When you see that guy coming up who's such a presence, he was really, you know, like a beacon of hope.
I disagree. I really disagree. I think that
every single level he came up, he struggled and then dominated it.
I know, but there was such cynicism when it came to the Yankees and prospects because they got such a bad rep. Cashman got such a bad rep through the late 2000s and then early 2010s for loving prospects and then not having them pan out. I mean, think about the supposed to be rotation in 2008 with Jabba Chamberlain, Phil Hughes, and Ian Kennedy. One of those guys kind of worked for the Yankees, right?
One kind of worked? Phil Hughes?
Phil Hughes. I mean,
Jabba Chamberlain worked for a little bit when he was used correctly.
He was good in the 2007 second half of the season. I wouldn't say overall. I think the Yankees completely messed up Jonathan Chamberlain. I'm not going to blame Jonathan Chamberlain for that.
Ian Kennedy's still getting paid.
Ian Kennedy turned out to be maybe the best pitcher out of any of them.
Yeah, definitely the best pitcher. He's still in the league.
And
everybody else is out of the league.
It just wasn't with the Yankees. Phil Hughes at least had a couple decent years in the rotation, and he helped them in the 09 playoffs out of the bullpen. Right. So, but there was such a bad aura around Yankees prospects until we saw Severino come up in 15 and look like a good pitcher. And then we're like, holy shit, we haven't seen one of these since Ching Ming Wong. Greg Bird actually come up and offensively fill the shoes of Mark Teixeira in, when was that? 15, right?
Yeah, and now you're seeing the beginning of some of these guys, but you also see Judge was the guy for me. I mean, I was having a back and forth with a buddy of mine who's an Orioles fan, and I think he was in the minor league, so it had to have been 15. And I was saying, like, this dude's going to be the face of baseball. Like, he's like the perfect. If he could hit in the major leagues, like, he's definitely going to be the face of baseball because of just the way his presence and the way he looks. And there was a ton of excitement.
We had the Judgment Day shirts when we went there for his first game, but he did not look impressive in 2016 at all.
No.
It was Gary Sanchez that looked impressive.
Right.
Everyone was like, holy shit, who is this guy? Babe Ruth, who had been in the system forever and a name we had heard forever. He was always like the next catcher who they didn't trade because they had Cervelli,
they had Montero,
they traded him. They had John Ryan Murphy, they traded him. And Gary Sanchez was always the one who was like, oh yeah, they still have Gary Sanchez. And somehow he's not old yet because he's been in the system since he's 16 years old. And he's just the one they never traded for good reason.
And even him, before he came up, I mean, he had that whole situation where I think when he was in Trenton, and they pulled him back from Fall League, or it was the Futures game, pulled him back from the Futures game and wasn't able to play in that. Yeah, and he got basically benched for having, you know, whatever the attitude problems or that all those attitude things, like the stigma of him being lazy, all that crap, all that negativity about his attitude stemmed from that. Mm-hmm. That's where he
didn't help himself with some of the stuff last year.
No, last year definitely compounded it.
And to get this back on track to what we were talking about with the Red Sox and how the tale of two different teams this year, anyways, the Red Sox went downhill. Yankees improved even with all the injuries. I mean, look at the season series. The Yankees 14-5 against the Red Sox this year. Last year they were 9-10.
Yeah, that's really when you see what they've done against the AL East, it's super impressive. The fact that they've handled the Boston Red Sox this entire season definitely speaks to that. And you know, look, this is another thing. Like, you look at what happened last year with the Boston Red Sox. We've talked about this 100 times. Everything went beautifully. Everything went perfectly for them. Even the injuries, like, they all happened at the right time, and then everybody got back at the right time. So the stars were aligned for them last year, and I think it masked some of the deficiencies. And also, it's very clear that the Boston Red Sox were definitely trying to stay under that luxury tax. We know that they didn't sign Kimbrel. We know that they didn't do really anything.
They're way over the luxury tax this year.
But they didn't address. I thought their second one where they're.
No, they have the highest payroll in baseball.
Oh, I thought they. Who did they sign that took them over?
Eovaldi.
No, Eovaldi kept them. They were still under it. Kimbrel was one of the linchpins for that second threshold.
I don't know about.
We got to look it up again. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they were.
I know the Red Sox have the highest payroll in baseball this year.
They were,
and that was one of the things that was said that I was reading this week when Dombrowski was fired, is that you can't have the highest payroll in baseball and miss the playoffs. It just can't happen. And someone's going to have to take a fall. Dombrowski's taking a fall also because they didn't believe he could do what they wanted to do, what they want to do now, what John Henry apparently wants to do now, is get under the luxury tax, is cut payroll, is walk away from guys that are going to be hard decisions like Mookie Betts or JD Martinez and start getting some prospects back. That is what John Henry wants to do. And he does not think Dombrowski's capable of doing that.
Well, that's not what Dombrowski does. He doesn't deal with prospects. Right. He deals with guys that have money.
But Dombrowski's still under contract this year. They're paying Dombrowski just to go away.
Well,
I know you're looking up the luxury tax stuff.
There's a lot of money that's involved for what they're doing next year, though. If you have, who cares if you're paying him? If he's making those decisions, then you're costing yourself a hell of a lot more.
No, of course, if you're doing
the wrong thing.
Of course. And it's not like, even when you look at the season series, the Yankees were, it's not like they dominated them on the mound. The Yankees ERA was 5.55, which is terrible. The Red Sox ERA 6.52 against the Yankees, even more terrible. London may have affected some of these numbers. Just thinking about those two games in London, that was fake baseball for a weekend. But even if you take those out, the numbers aren't great. The Red Sox actually out-homered the Yankees in the season series, but it was really, the biggest difference was timely hitting and bullpen. That's what it came down to. That's exactly, even though the Red Sox bullpen has been decent this year, that's basically what the season series came down to.
I mean, that was a huge area that they needed to improve that they just didn't touch.
Their bullpen has been better ERA-wise than their starting rotation.
Well, I think their starting rotation took a nosedive. That's also a factor when you're looking at what Porcello done. Price fell off a cliff. Sale never even got to the cliff. I mean, the dude is they've had a terrible year on the starter side. So, you know, maybe that's just the fact that they've been so bad has made the bullpen not look as bad. It's a bad pitching staff overall. That's just what they've become.
And the Yankees pitching staff is starting to round at the form. Paxton was really good on the road, which is encouraging. He pitched 6 2/3 innings, 3 walks. Would like to see him reduce that. But overall, a great start. No runs against the Red Sox, who, even though they're dead, they're the walking dead at that point, they're still a dangerous offense. Do you think... Because now there's no question in my mind right now he's the game one playoff starter. Are you still up in the air? Because last episode you said Tanaka.
Well, right. I think
doesn't necessarily change things.
Yeah.
But I've been on the you got to start Paxton over Tanaka for about 2 weeks now, because what have you done for me lately?
Well, that's the thing. But that's the
who's
thing.
Who's pitching better right now?
Right, but
that's who I'm going with.
And we're not in the playoffs right now. So that's the thing. Like, still, I still think Tanaka is probably the leader in the clubhouse. But if you have Paxton continuing this and staying on this path for the rest of the season, you know, with minor hiccups, then I think that changes. But he's got to continue it. I mean, yeah, he's been an unbelievable, really unbelievable. So right now he's been their best pitcher, and you should throw your best pitcher. So,
well, and I just think he's the only starter, barring Severino coming back and turning back into 80% of Severino, he's the one starter on the team that can just take the bats and shove them right down your throat. Like, no chance.
Well, I mean, I would argue that Paxton can do the same.
I just said Paxton.
Oh, I thought you meant Severino.
Coming back and being able to do that too. Paxton is the one starter.
No doubt
who can
about
just
it.
wipe out a lineup for a game.
I mean, you say wipe out. I think when in your head, I've known you long enough, you're thinking high velocity fastball that goes along with the strikeout. But
thinking overpowering, making hitters look overmatched.
Okay, but when you look at what Herman does with the strikeout percentage or the swing to miss ratio with what he has when he's on, he also makes people look very stupid, but for different reasons.
Herman has not been on for about 2 months now.
No, he has not been on. But I'm saying he's got, when he is on, he's that guy. He can make swing. He's not a contact guy.
I'm a little upset about the rainout tonight because I wanted to see how Herman looked out of the bullpen.
Right.
Because he's going to be backing up Sabathia. I think there's a real chance we don't even see Herman start in the playoffs. He'll pitch. Obviously, he's going to pitch. But I think they're not trusting him to... I think that he's... It's not like he's done anything to lose their trust. I just think, I don't know if he ever really had it.
Well, I think it was out of necessity for a while. Everybody was injured, and Domingo Herman was the guy that was stepping up in place of Severino, and he was putting up light Severino-like numbers for the first half of the year. So when you're seeing the splits of what Severino did last year and then what Herman did in the first year, there's not that much of a discrepancy when
there
you
was.
See
I mean,
how much...
Again, we've talked about it. There but was...
But when you're seeing the when
wins
you're seeing
and
the
losses,
production,
no. Wins and losses, when, no. But
the production of a player, when you're seeing that, it was very similar in the way that he was doing it. With the way that he was leading this team and the way that he picked it up. I know Severino had like one of the all-time like first halves last year, and he was unhittable. Like, the guy was phenomenal. Yeah. But Herman, when you're coming out there, he didn't have to that extreme, but he was getting the same results when he was going out.
Yeah, the same results if you mean Yankees winning the game that he started.
Oh, I mean productive, high-quality starts. And I'm not saying six innings quality start. I'm saying highly productive quality starts from a guy getting a ton of swings and misses.
I think we're splitting hairs here. But I just flat-out disagree that Domingo Germán was as good as Severino was in the first half of last year. He just wasn't. He was great. He just wasn't that good. But I think he was what they needed at the time, and that was great. He stabilized the rotation when the rotation was otherwise a complete disaster. I mean, that thing, think about what was the rotation in the first half of the year? Domingo Germán, and then an untrustworthy Pax, an untrustworthy Tanaka. And terrible Hap.
Tanaka's had, like, you know, those outlier starts, but for the most part, he's been fine.
Sunday night against the Red Sox, he pitched four innings and gave up four runs.
Yeah, fine.
Fine?
No, that's not good. But I'm saying for the most part, the majority of the season, you throw out some of the blow. I know it's nine runs a game. I get it. Okay. The blowout starts. Yeah, he's had those. There's no doubt.
Fine. Yes, I'll grant you throwing out the London start. You even want to throw out the disaster at Fenway Park, which I don't think you should. Okay, he's still been inconsistent.
There's no doubt he's been inconsistent. And he's found more consistency with this new grip.
And I definitely agree that he could go out in the playoffs and be great. He could pitch game two and give you six innings of one run, and it's like beautiful. But I don't have enough confidence in Tanaka right now to send him out there for game one and then knowing he's going to be the guy potentially game five.
You can't do that. I think if Paxton continues this, and this is the Paxton that we see for the remainder of the year, then you just can't do that. You absolutely can't. You have to throw your best guy in that sense. Yeah. Have to, especially because it's such a big difference. Like, he's dominating,
right?
So
and against really good lineups recently, Dodgers, Red Sox,
and it's not a. And when you see the stuff, when you see the high 90s fastball. And then him changing the speeds and the locations of the way he's doing it now. I mean, he's really pitching too. He's not just he's not just throwing out there and not going off of brute stuff. Like he's pitching around things. He's hitting spots. But the fact that he can change the speed as well as he is now and getting that different eye location, like that to me is one of the biggest differences in him now and what he was early in the season.
And I know people have talked about matchups, like who are they going to be playing in the ALDS? Maybe you play a matchup game. I think you're getting too cute if you're playing a matchup game in game one of the playoffs.
Yeah, because theoretically, I mean, maybe they're pressed because of the wild card, right? But and how the season ends,
you might see their best pitcher game three.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because they may be trying to win the game before the wild card game,
right?
To not get in the wild card game or get home field advantage of the wild card game. You never know.
So,
which is great, which I'm loving talking about because
right,
it's
we
other
just
people
sit back, put our feet up, and enjoy watching teams try and kill themselves to get to the next round.
Yeah, just root for you know 15 inning games.
Hell yeah,
all day. Definitely. Give me
everybody
the shit out of these games.
Everybody pitches. On the wild card game. and hopefully wherever that's played, that team has to fly far as shit to get to New York for the first game.
I don't know how much the flight really kicks into it, but why not? Let's throw
You're
that in there.
Telling
too.
Me it's Tampa at Oakland for the wild card game. Tampa flies to Oakland and they say Tampa wins. Then they got to fly to New York. That's not going to affect them.
I mean, these guys were on a flight to Detroit.
You saw them. I did
Knocked
see them cozied
out.
Up. Cozied up in the
Knocked
little
out.
Blankets.
What is that? A 2 hour, 3 hour flight?
To Detroit, yeah.
I'm saying so you're sleeping, so what's the difference? Give me 5 hours or 3 hours.
No, you know there's a difference. This is sleeping on a plane is not comfortable, even if you're in a luxury seat.
Honestly, I was surprised by the accommodations. Did not look comfortable.
Not great.
It actually gave me agita because I don't like I can't stand when I can't stretch my legs out.
I have said I've said this before on the show. Why are the Yankees chartering just like a regular flight? Why are they not? Why does everyone not have a pod?
Right.
I mean, you are the richest franchise in baseball. You are worth the most. You put all this money and investment into making sure these players are.
It, does,
at the top
it doesn't
of their
have
game.
To be the Boston Red Sox chartered flight
no,
like
no,
they
no.
had. That.
Everyone just has a pod.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, fine. You're flying Boston to New York. Maybe you don't have a pod. But any flight longer than 2 hours, you got give me a pod.
You should have. They should have pods. I when I saw what they were, I'm like, are these guys riding coach? Like, it looks like they're all riding coach.
It's like you got Chapman, who's like 6'5", whatever. His legs are 6'6", like even though he's only
face.
Chapman's yeah. legs are longer than his body. Somehow the math works out. But his legs were stretched out above Gio's head. So yeah, not great. And our boy DJ in the back studying up. Just because he's going through a little slump.
You cannot go through slumps. You think he's going to sleep if he's slumping? You can't do that.
First slump I can remember of his this season. He was in a 3-for-22 skid. That's 136. He broke it with an RBI single. A little update on his key situation. So runners in scoring position. He is now hitting 404, 46-for-114, with a 172 WRC plus, which is massive, and a 428 WOBA. High leverage situation. So this is Fangraphs and Baseball Reference calculate leverage a little bit differently. So this is Fangraphs high leverage situations. He's hitting 378 in 37 at-bats, 404 WOBA, 155 WRC plus. So even though he has come back down to earth a little bit, we knew that was going to happen. He's not going to hit 500 all season with runners in scoring position. Still great.
I got to tell you, I thought it was going to happen all year. I found the Red Sox stat, by the way. I was right. So they,
what is their payroll?
So the, here we go. They have a major league high of 240.8, at July 1st. They were 34.8 million over the tax threshold. Have to pay the 50% repeater tax on anything they spend over that threshold. But if they go over it by more than 40 million, that threshold soars to 95% plus the significant loss of next year's amateur draft. So he's been trying to stay under that, and now he can't exceed 246.
So they're at 240. So they have had 6 million under it.
Right. So that's why that was one of the big reasons
potentially why they didn't sign Kimbrel or another.
It's exactly why reliever. They didn't sign him, or why they didn't do anything at the deadline, because it was too close. If they acquired someone, the money that they probably brought over would have been.
But see, then the counter argument to that is, if you're John Henry and you're already spending $240 million and you're trying to just win another World Series, because anything other than that for the Red Sox this year was a failure, then do what you got to do,
or don't, because you know that you're not going to get it because they're further away than one closer.
I don't know. I'm talking about back in January.
Yeah,
like
when you're
assembling your team for next year. Like, why are you pinching pennies now?
Well, that's the problem. They're signing guys like Eovaldi, trying to get by, getting cute, and staying under that threshold, thinking that they can do it. Again, euphoria on a winner's high, thinking that you can do no wrong. Literally, you just had the perfect season, so you're making decisions in a clouded judgment at this point.
Oh, that Eovaldi signing was 100%. A thank you for pitching that in that 18 inning game.
I'm not even saying it was a thank you. It was like,
it was a thank you.
I think it was, we believe you, which is even worse.
Except too bad everyone in baseball said that's a bad contract.
Well, guess what? They're smarter than everybody else. They're in Boston. They're smarter than everybody else. That's what they think. So anyway, enough of them.
There was a weird play in this game. The Monday game, where it was fourth inning and runners on second and third, Encarnacion was at third and he runs on contact. I don't know why the contact play is on with Encarnacion running. He's slow as shit. And he was thrown out by a wide margin. It was a grounder to third base, I believe. So this got me thinking, like, if there's a weakness that just, maybe a lot of people might not be thinking about for this team in the playoffs, it might be base running. Just eye test wise, because that's really what I was going on. Eye test wise, the Yankees are not a good base running team. And then I started to look at some of the metrics, and I use Fangraph's base running metric, which is an all encompassing stat that combines stolen bases, caught stealing, and other quote base running plays, like taking extra bases, being thrown out on the bases, etc., into a runs above or below average. So it's a very easy stat to understand. If you're positive, you're good. If you're negative, you're bad. If you're zero, you're zero. And the Yankees as a team, I had it in here. Where did it go? Yankees as a team are 14th in Major League Baseball with 0.1 positive runs. So basically zero. They're a league average base running team.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Okay.
That's
not gonna kill you.
That's fine. We're not a big stolen base team. Not a guy. A lot of home run hitters.
Right.
How many home run hitters go first to third?
That is what I discovered, because when you look at the different playoff teams and where they rank in Major League Baseball, the best team that's in the playoffs is Tampa. They're sixth. That makes sense for Tampa. Then Cleveland's 12th. Yankees are 14th. Oakland's 22nd. Minnesota's 23rd. Houston is 26th. What do Oakland, Minnesota, Houston, and the Yankees all have in common, and Cleveland for that matter? They hit a lot of home runs. They don't want to make outs on the base passes because they want two-run home runs and three-run home runs.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to – you'll probably see a discrepancy. Well, Oakland kind of throws this out the way, Minnesota. But the power hitters cost more money, right? So a lot of times when you see a team that's spending more money and they're getting more home runs, they're – one, these guys are paid a ton of money to drive the ball and to knock runners in. So like you said, they don't want to cause any – outs on the base path if they don't have to, because they're paying that guy to knock you in from first base.
It's coaching. Yeah. It's they're coaching these strategery. Guys not to do that.
It's the strategery of baseball today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're, but when you see like Oakland and they're, I mean, that's, you know, that's Billy Beane getting lucky. Fell into some power hitters.
And on the Yankees, Gardner's the best base runner. No surprise there. 4.6 base running. Above average. Judge 1.3 is second. I was surprised. Didi is third, 1.1.
Why were you surprised by that?
I just think of Didi as a stupid base runner. He's made countless bad base running plays in his time with the Yankees.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you have some speed, you're probably going to be rated better than not speed, and it'll throw it off.
So there goes your theory.
Sneaky fast, man. That parrot put some wings behind him.
I think as much as being fast, it's don't make mistakes.
Yeah,
that's what the Yankees are looking for. They're not necessarily looking for go first to third when you really shouldn't have. It's don't get thrown out trying to go first and third.
So where was Glaber on this list?
He was just below league average, minus 0.6.
Okay.
Not terrible. Last year, he was like minus 2.5.
Yeah, he makes boneheaded moves. I mean, it's his vice. It's the one thing that we can complain about Glaber. If you're gonna look for something to complain about Glaber Torres, which there's not much.
No, it's lapses. It's lapses, mental lapses.
In defensively in focus and or whatever running. It is. Yeah, cost him four runs the other day.
Yeah. Voit minus four. He's the worst because he runs the bases like a meathead.
Yeah, he puts his head down, just runs. It's not fast. It's not good.
My name Luke. Must get to next bat.
Yeah, he. Surprised the ball didn't go out.
Talkman was positive 1.2. It's another reason why not having Talkman on the playoff roster might be more of a hit than you realize.
I mean, when you look at what the way that this season has gone and obviously the way that he's played, I mean, he went from being compared to Mike Trout for a solid month, then, you know, slow down a little bit, I'd say, but still a very good player and far exceeded anybody's expectations outside the organization. Who knows what they were expecting inside the organization. But obviously they thought,
well, Brian Cashman will beat his chest and say that he expected this.
Of course. Yeah. The nerds.
That's what he gets to do when he's the player in and it works.
Absolutely.
Then he gets to beat his chest.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that everybody else has gone down, the fact that we haven't had Stanton for the entire season. And now Gardner's playing center field because Hicks is out, makes left field a very big, it could be a very big problem, because when you have, the options now of Frazier and Maben and Tyler Wade and maybe Stanton, if he can go out and play left field when he comes back.
To be back next homestand.
They're saying he's going to be a fielder, not just a DH.
Well, yeah, because you've got, yeah.
You have to at some point. Someone's going to have to play the field with Encarnacion, Voit, and
bodies out there.
But, you know, it's a hole now that Talkman's not out there as far as defensiveness, I think. Defensive prowlness. Although Tyler Wade looks damn comfortable out there in any position. The guy just looks like he's comfortable in every position.
Yeah.
It's really more and more I'm watching him play. I'm seeing a lot of confidence in Boone and loving the fact that he can put him anywhere on the field at a certain point in the game. And I feel like that is one of those just like those gold standard check marks for a manager when it comes to the postseason.
I still think that would be a wasted roster spot, but I could see them doing it.
You don't. Well, what if left field? Now you're looking at Stanton or Clint Frazier in left field. Now you have a potential defensive problem late in the game.
Well, yeah, okay, fine. If they're outfield going into the playoffs, because Hicks is probably done for the season too.
That's what it looks like.
Talkman and Hicks are likely done for the season. So if your outfield is Judge, Gardner, Stanton, and then you need you have Maben as a fourth outfielder.
Maben's got a hit for the rest of the year.
He's also dealing with a wrist issue.
Yeah.
So I don't even think he needs to hit. I think he's just going to be on the roster because he can.
That's why I think Tyler Wade's out there right now. I think Maben
is. Do you trust Tyler Wade in the outfield more than Maben? I know Maben's had his adventures.
I'm not saying it's either or. I'm saying Tyler Wade is insurance in case Maben can't. Because Maben could play center field, but he's not.
No. Maben.
But he could.
Maben's not going to. No.
If Gardner went down, Maben could play center field.
He wouldn't, though.
Who would? Judge?
Yes.
That's a problem for me. I don't like that.
Aaron Judge is a far better outfielder than Cameron Maben.
I understand that, but there's also a lot of liability issues that come with that. Moving Judge to center field in the playoffs when he hadn't played there all year long. I'm sorry, but that's a tough thing to do.
Cameron Maben hasn't played there all year long. I understand he's played there in his career.
This is my point.
But the last time he played significant time in center field, it was very below average. This was like years ago.
My point is that he could, but he's not the guy that they want to put out there at all. So Tyler Wade is now getting an audition in the outfield and seeing what he looks like and his comfort level in different positions.
I think you got to stick Tyler Wade in center field a couple of these games.
Oh, hell yeah.
They put him in right field last night, but they got to stick. I didn't see a lineup tonight. Did you?
I did not see it before the rainout. No.
You got to give him some time in center field.
So there's going to be some experimentation, but at the same time now, this is also going into the fact that they're trying to get home field advantage, and now
are they trying to get home field advantage? Well, I couldn't tell from last night.
You know, some nights you just can't throw everybody, all right? And they're the Detroit Tigers. Hit a few home runs. Let's win this game. How are you supposed to know that you're even the bad pitchers on the Yankees are going to give up that many damn runs against the Tigers?
We'll talk about that Tigers game because it was damn frustrating.
But Wade by far gives you the most athleticism out there. He looks comfortable. Whether you hate him or not as an offensive player, the guy can play defense and run the bases.
And he's not going to get an at-bat in the playoffs. So it doesn't really
unless it's an extra inning game and he's in there for defensive reasons and it keeps going. That's it.
And if your question was, do you carry Clint Frazier or Tyler Wade? I carry Tyler Wade for that very reason because even though Clint Frazier can give you good at-bat, maybe – okay, sorry, I'm jumping around. But if Stanton's not back, then maybe you do carry Clint Frazier because then he's going to need to get at-bats.
Right.
And I rather have Clint Frazier hitting than Tyler Wade running and playing defense.
Well, if Stanton isn't, if they don't want him playing the outfield every single day also, I mean, we have to see how that works.
If he can't play the outfield every single day, then don't put him on the roster. I'm serious.
Yeah.
You have a DH already. You have two DHs pretty much with Voit and Encarnacion.
Right. So then you're looking at, let's just say he's a DH or not on the roster because for this scenario, it doesn't matter. If he's not playing left field, you're looking at an audition right now, head-to-head, mano-a-mano, one-on-one, Clint Frazier, Cameron Maben. The guy that kept him in the AAA for a while, and now Tyler Wade's getting thrown in there. But he's not the guy that's going to be playing left field to start games. It's going to be one of those two.
I don't think you can carry Stanton as a DH and Voit and Encarnacion. That is you're handcuffing yourself.
Yeah.
Because your bench at that point is Austin Romine, who's a backup catcher, and then two DH first basemen and just the DH. And like a utility guy, that is all you're setting yourself up for a lot of trouble if you do that.
Yeah, there's no flexibility. That's the key word. We know they like flexibility.
We have 472 savages heading into the Bronx for Game 2 of the ALDS. We don't know who they're going to play yet. That doesn't matter. People are pumped up. If you did not get tickets through us and you want to go to a playoff game, we're going to have tickets for the ALCS and the World Series, but if you want to go to an ALDS game and you do not get tickets through us, use SeatGeek. That is going to be the best way to find tickets. SeatGeek, they pull millions of tickets to live events. They have a price match guarantee. You can search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. In an industry that tends to stagnate, SeatGeek decided to stand out from the crowd. They've built the fastest way to find tickets so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. They have 50,000 five-star reviews in their in the App Store on their app. The app is so seamless. It's so smooth. They color code all of the tickets from red. That means you're getting a bad deal, all the way up to green. That means you're getting a good deal. It's graded on a scale from 1 to 10. They display them, like I said, in an interactive seat map. Sometimes you go onto some of these other apps or websites and it's just convoluted and confusing. You don't know what you're clicking on. SeatGeek, it's easy to tap through, and they show you the preview of the seat as well. It's beautiful. I love it. I've used it many different times to not only go to Yankees games, to go to the theater. I took Leanne out to a nice little Broadway show that got me a lot of points last Valentine's Day. I know you've used it to see the shitty Jets. I don't know why.
Michael K does not use it because he gets fraudulent tickets to go to Broadway and then can't get in because the tickets are no good. Not that problem. Not going to have that problem.
SeatGeek guarantees the tickets. There's no fraudulent tickets. So he's clearly not using SeatGeek.
That's his thing. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you got to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase.
All right, so this Detroit game, first game of the series, they tried to get cute. They tried to steal a game. They thought, we're going in to play the 100-loss Tigers. We can throw out Nestor Cortez plus Guerin plus Loaisiga plus Chance Adams, and we're going to score a bunch of runs and we're going to win. It almost worked. They almost got away with one, but they didn't.
They went up 6-0. 6-0.
You're up 6-0, and you immediately give it back with 6 in the third inning. Gleyber Torres' error was definitely the turning point of that inning. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But it's still not an excuse. Your pitching still sucked against a crappy team. What did the YES graphic show? They're either 29th or 30th in baseball in every offensive category.
Yeah, they're a bad team. Just a completely bad team. You're right. That inning changed it with Gleyber not seeing the ball, and it was a double play inning ending. Sessa comes in, gets the ground ball, and then from there, it just kind of snowballed out.
It spiraled out of control.
Yeah, there were bad things that happened. 4 runs scored. I mean, even ground balls that he got that were still going through the infield, finding holes, and it just escalated from there and kept going, and unfortunately kept them in the game. Ball kept leaving the park. But you know what I saw from this game? I saw one thing. I saw one thing and one thing only. Didi. Didi's getting hot, baby. Heating back up.
Getting that swag back.
Getting a little smoke on that bat, because we know what happens when Didi gets hot. Didi gets hot.
Don't let him get hot. Yeah. I mean, the offense was not a problem. They hit 6 home runs and scored 10 runs.
I'm just looking at Didi. I want Didi to get right at the plate. There are certain things that we have to do ending the season, right? Home field advantage, obviously. Let's talk about that ad nauseum. But in order to get there, you need your players to play well. And I want my shortstop to play well, because he is our shortstop. He's going to be the starting shortstop in the playoffs. Why not hit well? Why not get him going and get him to a point where he's feeling good? Because we know what he's like in clutch situations. Dude's clutch.
So you're taking a positive spin on it. And I'm not even being negative about last night, because everyone who sucked in that game, with the exception of Adam Ottavino, is not going to be pitching for you in high leverage situations. So it's a weird game, okay? Weird game. But it's still the fact that, what are they trying to do? What are the Yankees trying to do? Are they trying to win home field advantage, or are they trying to take an opportunity to rest guys?
See, that's the thing. I don't think, like, everybody's like, oh, got to win home field advantage. They're going after home field advantage. Yes, they're going after home field advantage. They're not going to go at the cost of breaking guys down and playing like they normally would. That would be ludicrous. When you're playing the Detroit Tigers, you'd think, as one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball, that you can probably throw a few other guys out there, score 11 runs, and win the game. There's ways to win games without burning your entire and it doesn't need to be, oh, you don't care about that game. I just don't. That narrative to me is so convenient when you lose a weird game like you described it to the Detroit Tigers. It's an easy way to go.
And we know Canley was unavailable for this tendonitis. This, what was it, wrist tendonitis, right?
Yeah, I think it was wrist tendonitis.
Wrist tendonitis.
Which is, that's something to keep an eye on.
He didn't pitch since Saturday.
Right.
But Boone said after last night's game, he would be good to go for Wednesday night's game. I know there's no game, but he would have been good to go. So 3 days off is, I guess, all he needed to heal his wrist tendonitis. He was not good enough to go Tuesday night when they needed him. But then after the game, Boone said, no, he's good to go tomorrow. Don't worry, guys. That's very convenient timing.
Well, I mean, look, they have at this point, I think they're scheduling guys for days off. If you feel something, you're probably going to get the day off. So there's probably now a new code be like, look, no need to tough it out anymore, guys. Right now we're in the home stretch. We're all going for this, but it's next man up. We've done it all year long. If you're feeling something, if you're feeling a lingering injury, now is not the time to try to push through it and get yourself hurt. Look what happened to Mike Tauchman. Apparently he'd been complaining, or they knew about something in his calf that was a problem for a while. He's pushing through it, obviously in a position where he's got to continue up his play because there's guys right behind him that might take his spot. It's a very competitive spot in the outfield for the Yankees right now, or it was. and then boom, you know, grade two strain or whatever it is, popped his calf. Who knows if that was because, you know, he was playing on something hurt and it just got worse. I don't know. But it's something to think about. And I think they're going to be more cautious than they would if they had a 3-run lead. And I don't care about that. I want them to be healthy over all things. Yeah, yes, home field advantage is important, but be healthy.
It backfired last night because they ended up having to use Britton and Ottavino when they didn't plan on doing it. So they end up using two of their big high leverage guys last night. But I'm looking at the schedule now. So they were off last Thursday before the Boston series. Going into last night, they thought they were not going to be off again until the 16th, right? 16th after the Toronto series. So going into last night, they had six games before an off day. And then they have an off day, and then they play six more games, and then they have an off day. Two more games, off day. And then the last series of the season. There's three off days coming up in the next 2 weeks. That's more than you normally have. I'm not saying that resting guys is the wrong move and trying to get everyone good is not the right move, because it is the right move. But again, you're getting awfully cute when you go in with Nestor Cortes backed up by Cody Gearin, backed up by Jonathan Loaisiga, backed up by...
I mean, Ottavino gave up.
I know
Ottavino
that.
Didn't look good.
But Ottavino was not in the plan to pitch last night. Pitched because they ended up getting a lead. Boone was trying to get everybody a day off. Everybody who mattered a day off.
Right. But they brought in some of their guys, and one of them didn't look good. It happens. I'm just not going to blow a gasket over a freaking 12 to 11. No, not you, but there's a lot of people that are complaining the fact that because they lost some game in Detroit that it's the firm decision and the path of the thinking of the New York Yankees that they don't care about home field advantage because they tried to get some guys off. And it's not even so much about the 3 days, those off days. Like I don't think that really plays as much into it. It's what are you feeling right now? Are you knocked up? Do you feel knocked up? Do you feel something going on with something on your body? Because if you do, speak up. It's a little bit more leniency at this point. We're gonna err on the side of caution. I think that's a thing.
They roll Mike Tauchman out there on crutches and say, "Look at this guy. Don't do what this guy did.
Yeah.
Don't be a hero." I don't remember what I was gonna say. The home runs. So six home runs last night. Gardner now has he hit two. He's got the most home runs.
Is he the team lead yet?
Yeah. He had most home runs for his career at any point. So I asked on Twitter, and I seriously asked, do people still care about home runs? Because I wanted to know.
Yeah.
It was pretty split. I didn't do a poll, but I would say 60% of the responses said, yes, I still love home runs, still get excited by home runs. But a healthy percentage said, no, kind of desensitized. Someone used a great analogy. So what's your favorite food, Scott? What's your favorite meal? One more meal of your life, like you're on death row. You're going to go balls out and you're going to eat this meal.
Yeah. It's going to be a medium rare steak.
Medium
rare
steak.
Probably a strip cut.
Like huge, right? Like big, like 24 ouncer, like loaded baked potato on the side.
No,
maybe.
I would probably not going to go for a 24 ouncer because I would question the cut of said meat at that point. But you get my point.
I get your point. Whatever your favorite meal is, if you love like big juicy bacon double cheeseburger and you have that once a week, that's your cheat meal.
Yeah.
It fucking tastes delicious.
Whoa.
You love it.
Yep.
Yep. What happens if you're forced to eat that five times a night? It's not going to taste so good.
Five times a night?
Yeah. Every 30 minutes, you're eating another bacon double cheeseburger. You're eating another nice medium rare steak. You're going to get sick. It's not going to be as fun. And that's what's happened with home runs. It is a perfect analogy. That is what happened with home runs.
It's a pretty
terrible analogy. Home runs used to be exciting, okay? Home runs used to be exciting, right?
Yeah.
Brett Gardner should not be hitting mid-20s home runs. He shouldn't, okay? It no longer is impressive if Brett Gardner, who's been a fantastic Major League Baseball player and maybe one of the most beloved Yankees of the last decade, he is not a 25 home run hitter.
Why does it have to be? I mean, maybe it's just the way that the game is and progressing, and it doesn't need to be this sexy thing anymore. It's just part of the game now.
Well, that sucks.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the steroid era, you know, made this the home run ball, you know, they made it Hollywood. It was this big, ritzy, glittery thing that was phenomenal, though. And everybody loves it.
Why did it seem different in the steroid era?
Because first of all, the coverage just wasn't the same.
I've been trying to put my finger on it. I think it's
the media coverage. The media coverage now, we're all desensitized to media coverage, period, because it's everywhere you go. It's in your face. You can't get away from it. Whereas you go back to the 90s in those home run, 98, wherever, you don't have the internet like it is. You don't have that. You're still watching television to get your highlights. You're still going to a place at 6 p.m. to watch SportsCenter, and everybody is locked in on what's happening, and they can control the story, they can control the tone, they can control the narrative. Media is so different now, where we're consuming what we want. The narratives are much harder to control as far as a team or a league. The consumer is almost controlling the narratives at this point because they can go anywhere they want to watch anything. So back then, it was one message. It was one message, and Bud Selig was running the show, and he was feeding that. What's the movie with John Kerry where he's in a bubble? The Truman Show. It's like the Truman Show. He's just feeding us this one thing.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, yeah. The Truman Show. You never saw that show?
You said John Kerry.
Jim, whatever.
I did see the Truman Show. It's a good movie.
Good movie. So that's the big difference, I think. I think a lot of people don't they take it for granted because it's just, you know, maybe they grew up in the digital media era. But when you don't have cell phones at your fingertips to look up a score and you have to go to a television to watch a highlight, and you know all the broadcasters because they're the only place you can get your information and your tone for a game, and then you have guys who are on highlights like Len Berman on Channel 4 in New York, and you're looking at like that's the guy where you get your sports, or you go to the paper the next day. It's that the communication is a big deal.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that might be it. Yeah, that could very well be it. Also, I was 12 years old in the middle of the steroid era. That probably has something to do with it.
Yeah, but 12 years old today, you're all over Twitter, Instagram. You do whatever you want.
No, but 12-year-olds might love home runs now.
Every home run that's hit,
they might get excited.
But they're not hearing. It's not the same feeling as it was in '98. Is my point. Like they're just seeing. They're seeing a billion highlights of it. Everybody's cutting their own highlight. Whereas in '98, you're watching the same highlight. Everybody.
Yeah, listening to SportsCenter.
Back. Yeah, you're hearing that a lot.
Yeah. Thank God, Berman is not doing that anymore, especially with this home run rate. My computer is acting slow as crap. I'm trying to look up how many home runs. So in 1998, there were 5,064 home runs hit in Major League Baseball that season. And if my computer will load, I will tell you how many home runs were hit in 2019. But let's move on while that loads. So
the funny thing about this is when you're looking at this year and what the home runs have done, Minnesota Twins thought they had themselves a record. Minnesota Twins thought they had the Yankees beat in a record that will go down in the history books. Mm-mm. Watch out. Bronx Bombers getting healthy. Bronx Bombers see those.
This is what I'm saying.
Those Minnesota Twins. It's funny to step on the Twins.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's funny to step on the Twins when the Twins Absolutely. Are like, oh, we hit a lot of home runs. We're the best home runner. And then the Yankees are like, oh, hold on a minute. hold my beer. Yeah. And
you
then just
will be little brother again.
Start hitting the parrot goes for a walk like multiple
right.
times.
Hold on. This can't be right. Would you say, this is right. Would you say 1998 is the heart of the steroid era? The year you think of Mark McGuire, Sammy Sosa, like the whole home run chase. Fine.
I don't know. I always say late 90s. Definitely.
I don't know if 1998 was the highest home run in the steroid era or not. But there were, what did I say, 5,064 home runs hit?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. 6,084 home runs so far this year.
Yeah.
It's September 11th.
Look, there's a lot of other things, though. It's for me, it's so difficult, especially in baseball, really in any sport, to cross over eras. So many different factors. I mean, the amount of different things that are happening. They had steroids. Well, now the ball is juiced, and everybody is taught by swinging in a different plane, and they're all swinging for the fences. It's a different game. It's hard to compare it, even with the variables of steroids or juiced balls or whatever.
What I'm saying is, why did it not? I asked the question, why did the steroid era feel different? Because there weren't as many home runs in the steroid era. It was still more exciting.
You're right. There were not as many home runs, but the steroid era brought that in.
So maybe the amount of home runs that were exciting. I'm not every baseball fan. I am only me. I can have harsh opinions on some things. So I get sick of things more quickly than a lot of people. I'm sick of home runs.
I don't understand. Like, I am at this point, sick of home runs. I don't even know. What does that mean? You just don't want to see home runs anymore?
It is unimpressive. When Brett Gardner hits a home run now, I don't care. It is unimpressive.
It's a run on the board. That's what matters.
Of course. I want the Yankees to win, so I want them to score runs.
It's the fastest way to get a run on the board, is it not?
It is no longer cool. Hitting a home run is no longer cool.
That doesn't mean it's not effective.
That's not what I'm saying. But this is from a fan perspective.
I understand.
From a game watchability perspective, okay? Last night's game was not enjoyable. I know they lost, but these games are not as fun to watch.
I mean, an 11-12 game against a bad team is not fun to game watch in the first place. But when you're looking at what you've been exposed to, right? Anything, it doesn't matter what it is. You had your very bad analogy from someone on Twitter about eating something every 8 minutes, which is ludicrous. It doesn't even make any sense because your stomach is
makes perfect sense.
Anyway, but if you're watching baseball in the 80s and the 90s, early 90s. You're looking at a lot more gaps hit. You're looking at a lot of base running, a lot more bunting, a lot more. There's no shifting or any of that. So you're seeing that brand of baseball, right? You're used to that brand of baseball. Okay, now all of a sudden these guys are getting massive. They're pumping these things into their veins. Nobody knows it at that time, but they're huge and they're hitting the balls out. It's new. It's different. Awesome. The grass is greener now because I'm seeing home runs. And not only am I seeing home runs, but I didn't see them before, and they're fun. Because I didn't see a home run before. A home run feels different than a double if you're watching all doubles. And all of a sudden, you see the ball like majestically leave by the bat of some massive human being, and now there's a race as well. What are we doing here? So now we're looking at baseball, and you're saying, I hate the home run ball. Home run ball is boring. It's whatever. But what are you getting excited for? The double and the gap, the running the bases, the long innings of guys hitting stringing hits together. The grass is greener. It's just what you're used to and what you've been exposed to, and you're getting sick of that. Yes, the better analogy would be going to the cafeteria and having the same food on a daily basis, and you get sick of that. Not
That's exactly my
stuffing
analogy.
Your face for every eight. No, you made it weird.
No, I didn't. What I said was you took something that was enjoyable because you loved it, that you used to have sparingly, and then you're having it all the time now, and it's no longer enjoyable. That is the analogy.
You physically can't eat that many hamburgers.
Holy shit.
I can't eat that many hamburgers. Who can?
Yeah, because it's
But the Yankees can hit that many home runs.
It's literal, of course. Aaron Judge hit the rookie record for home runs 2 years ago. Pete Alonso might break it this year. No one cares. It is not impressive that he's going to break this record because it's fake. Everyone knows it's fake.
Mets fans care.
They only care because if he was breaking Cody Bellinger's record, they would not give a shit.
You're right. That's sad.
Yeah. Last thing I want to talk about is Severino. Pitched for Trenton tonight in a playoff game. I love that, don't you? Whoever they're facing, poor guys have to go up against Severino in a playoff game. But
that's like our men's league. Like, you have to have a guy on your roster by, I think it was July 10th, in order for them to be eligible for the playoffs. And you start seeing these like random dudes show up in the playoffs. You're like, what is happening here? I had Jose Lima pitch against me at one point. I'm like, Jose Lima. Yeah, Jose Lima, the major league pitcher, was on a rehab assignment in Norfolk at the Tides when they were with the Mets, when they were the Mets farm system. And Jose Lima came out on a Sunday and pitched in an NABA game.
You were playing.
Yes.
Did you get in that bat against them?
No, I did not face Jose Lima. He came in a relief. I don't remember, honestly. I just remember him being there. And then I went out and got drunk with him all night long and heard some very interesting stories about David Ortiz.
Do you care to share?
I've told this story.
No, you have not.
So Jose Lima came out. He played with a team and was friends with a guy. I know I told the story because my buddy, who was a bartender, he's, I don't know, 10, 15 years older than me, used to go down to the Tides games and would go down to the dugout after the games and before the games and would start yelling Spanish at all of the Venezuelan players because he was Venezuelan and he would help them out. A lot of these guys that came over didn't speak English, didn't know where to go to eat. Like, he would just help them out. This happens all over the place in a lot of different cities. And so he would go out and help them out. And got hooked up with Jose Lima. And so every time Lima came into town, if he came into town, he was on a rehab assignment for this, or he got them. At this point in his career, he may have been just like floating around.
What year was this?
I don't remember. And in the early 2000s, probably. No, that's not right. In the mid, I don't know. Anyway, he was.
We told this story.
Yeah. And then so he was out. We went over to this. We went out and went into Norfolk, Virginia, is where I went to college. And I stayed around there for a while. And then we went all night long. And dude was buying shots. Everybody, he was doing like, he got up on stage at this club we went to and took over all of the instruments and like just ran the show. It was unbelievable. One of the greatest storytellers I've ever seen. And gave some information about David Ortiz in confidence the next day when we were having Puerto Rican food at 11 o'clock.
It wasn't even when everyone was drunk. He did this sober?
It was the next day after we called David Ortiz on the phone, put him on speakerphone.
So this had to have been at least 2003, 2004 because people know who David Ortiz – like, I guess he could have been with the Twins at the time. But
so I think it was probably 6-07, something like that.
What are the Tides minor league team for?
They were the Mets at that point.
Okay, so he was with the Mets in 06.
There you go.
Tell us one thing that he said about David Ortiz. This is about his sugar mamas in the Dominican?
No, it has everything to do with baseball and something that he did.
Steroids?
Yeah, and Lima at that point when nobody – he confirmed it.
I mean, that's not breaking news.
It was then. It was then because it was
He had already shown up on that report.
Yeah, it was denial. Everybody was denying at that point. But I mean, it was just one of those like you know, and then all of a sudden you're getting guys from who played and are like friends and are like, yeah, like this is definitely. I was like, damn, like this thing is deep. So that's and then like, you know, the whole thing started going down. But that was a fun night. Eating Puerto Rican food at like 11 o'clock the next day, not sleeping. Didn't go to sleep.
Not good.
Hanging out with Lima.
Not good for the bowels.
Did that way too much at that time.
It reminds me when I was at UVM because they had the Vermont Lake Monsters up there. Dimitri Young was rehabbing.
Was a wild man.
Came through.
He was an asshole too.
And got wrecked in town the night he was there. I was not with him. I just heard stories of people.
He's the one who threw the bat or was that Delman? Was that his brother? One of them threw the bat at the umpire in minor leagues. Just end over end through a bat.
I don't know. You're not thinking
Delman
of the guy
Dimitri Young.
You're not thinking of the guy who kicked the catcher, are you? And then threw
the
bat.
I'm thinking of Dimitri Young or Delman Young. It was one of the two of them. Maybe it was Delman Young. I don't know. It was one of the two of them. I'll look it up in a minute.
I remember Delman Young would swing at every first pitch, and the Yankees could not figure that out. And every first pitch, they would throw him a fastball down the middle, and he would hit lasers.
Yeah,
Severino.
One of them also throws bats at umpires.
Threw 64 pitches. I don't really give a crap what his line was, but it was 3 2/3 innings, 5 hits, 4 runs, 1 earned, no walks, 4 Ks. His velocity was 96 to 98, and his slider velocity was 88 to 89. But I think the big number here is 64 pitches, because that means he is at a point, if he threw 64 pitches tonight, he's going to make his next start in the majors against Anaheim next week, I believe on the 17th. You could bump him up maybe another 10 pitches, 75. Then after that, he's going to make another one. You can bump him up another 10 pitches, 85. He'll have one more start before the playoffs start, 95 pitches. We could see a 90-plus pitch Severino come October.
Yeah, and if you're in the 90s, I mean,
that's all you're throwing anyway for the Yankees.
You're a full-blown starting pitcher at that point, whatever that means. Delman Young, by the way.
It depends, but that's more than I thought we were going to see. I was surprised to see 64 pitches, to be honest. So that's very encouraging.
Yeah, and he feels good. Like, that's when you're looking at what's happening afterwards, too, and all the reports and what he's talking about and telling you how his body feels the next day. I'm looking at that. I'm looking for the pitches that he's thrown, like where they're comfortable. I'm looking at velocity. And then how do you feel the next day? Like, those are the three things that I'm most keyed in on.
Now he's going to start. He's pitching on 5 days rest. So this is also, it's still a test. It's still a work in progress with the test. How does he feel consecutive outings? Right.
Yep.
But all so far, so good.
Yeah, no, all things are pointing in the right direction, and they're definitely taking their sweet ass time with him at this point, and they have to, because there's no room for error.
Well, that's it. That was his final rehab.
I'm saying just in the rehab process, there's no room for error with trying to push him a little bit further. They got to basically handle with him with kid gloves. And so far, you know, knock on wood, besides the fact of not giving him an MRI before his last, ramp up. So they've done a good job, I guess.
I feel like that because they don't want to mess anything up again. There's an MRI machine on him at all times. They just got an MRI nerd on Severino following him around. Hey, sit down. Quick MRI.
The reason that Boone was talking about keeping him in Trenton for this game and not going to Detroit is that he used the phrase controlled situation. They want to control the atmosphere, everything that's happening. And Trenton, they have probably the ability to do more things. It's closer to New York. It's just a better situation, I think, for them to control what they want. So,
well, and it's not like, the Yankees have botched a bunch of injuries this year. Everyone's been hurt. But like the latest on Aaron Hicks, so he might need surgery. Okay. One of the recent updates we got from Aaron Boone on Aaron Hicks was his last MRI, Boone said, was the ligament is sound and the flexor strain is healed. Okay. Why could he need surgery now then?
Yeah. What is it? What's the reasoning?
What are you surgically repairing if the ligament is sound and the flexor is healed?
Beats me. I really don't know. I'm not a surgeon. I'm just a doctor.
There are differences. The Yankees medical staff has had a bad year. Somehow they're still competing for the best record in baseball. So,
wow. Yeah, this whole thing is weird because we went out to get that second opinion too. And they're talking about that. It's sound. I don't know. There's just gray. And I feel like they're just not giving us all the information. Because I think that's what happened after they gave us too much information. Now they're just holding everything back. Like the whole Stanton thing. Nobody has any idea what's going on with Stanton. No idea. If he's going to come, I'll know when he's back. That's it.
But he could come back and then go down again.
Very well could. Because nobody knows what's wrong with him.
All right. That's scary. That's going to do it for this episode.
I feel like you got it. There's an update here from Shannon. I feel like people need to hear this. No?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. So Shannon, a.k.a. biggest Mike Messina hater that we've ever come across.
Right.
So she sent me a long email, and I kind of parsed it down. But she says, I struggled to wrap my head around how he could be so boring despite being honored at Yankee Stadium for accomplishing a feat that has cemented his status as being somebody other than, quote, Mr. Almost. The wording of my initial question was more of an in-the-moment exaggeration and source of self-amusement while the guys wrapped up the pregame show. Because overreacting to everything, especially when you're bored, is part of being a Yankees fan, right? That's literally it. I adore Moose as a pitcher, but I am confused by his lack of excitement about anything ever. Perhaps he's simply saving the energy to get super stoked on the sports teams he coaches at high school.
That's a pretty good visual. I could see Mike Buscina going just balls, just getting so mad about some stupid thing in a high school game. I could see that. Like, it just blows. Like, he's been holding it in, trying to be monotone, trying to be like this nice guy from Stanford for a long time.
He's been doing Serenity and just, now this whole time.
Yeah, yeah. So he's been
doing Serenity. Finally exactly. Blows.
Right. He's Lloyd Braun going out there and about to just blow. Kind of looks like Lloyd Braun. He could play Lloyd Braun. She started out the email because I read the email as well. That was, I don't hate Messina.
That sounded like she hated Messina.
Backtracking a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hates Messina, loves Bird.
Well, that's the thing about Mike Messina is that he is so bland that he's hard to hate. But I guess he annoyed Shannon because he was so bland. That's actually kind of funny. She was so mad that he was so boring, she felt the need to write an angry email.
I think people also take boring as condescending and being smug.
Oh, you think so? Yes. I don't think he's condescending.
Oh, my God. You don't think he's smug at all?
This is why you think smug he's condescending.
Smug slash condescending.
This is why you think he's condescending. Because there's not many Mike Messina stories because he's a boring person. And one of the only ones we ever hear is how he graduated from Stanford in 3 years. So you think he's smart and smug.
I'm not saying I think that. I'm saying that is a general perception of Mike Messina. I think people think that he's an intellectual guy, doesn't say a lot, probably a little smug, probably thinks he's better than everybody else. Yeah. He got into it with Michael Kay. It's printed. There's things.
What was that about again? I don't remember.
It's just two big headed guys going at it.
No, but what happened? Like when was it? What happened?
I don't know why you're putting me on the spot here. I don't remember exactly the
I thought you knew. You threw it out there like you knew.
I just don't think he liked it. I think he probably thought he was smug. And Kay said some things about him that Messina didn't like. And
it's kind of funny that Michael Kay thought Mike Messina is smug when Michael Kay is smug.
He definitely gets that rap too.
Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Two more in Detroit for the makeup, and then three at Toronto. Gotta win these next two games, even though it's a doubleheader. Hey, another doubleheader. We thought we were done with doubleheaders. They've been great in doubleheaders this year. I think they're 9-1. So keep that rolling. Any last words, Scott?
No, I gotta keep it. You know, this is a perfect opportunity. I was waiting for like an explosion. Tonight was gonna be brutal, I feel like, if the Yankees actually played this game. I feel like they were gonna unleash the fury on the Tigers. And now they got to do it twice tomorrow. So they'll steal a couple games, do it in one swoop. That's efficiency. Like that. A lot of guys on that team.
Single admission doubleheader. All 55 people are going to be in attendance.
Yeah, it'll be a good day. Let's just get the hell out of Detroit and win some games.
All right, we'll talk to you on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.